In the Creekside room this morning, we have Luis Williams. Today's session number is 98.6, and it's titled Images of Service, Waiting Tables. Let's listen in.
I'm, for the two of you who weren't here last week, I'm Luis Williams, and I am from Valparaiso, Indiana. I'm a deaconess. I happen to be executive director of the Lutheran Deaconess Association. And also am involved in some ecumenical and worldwide organizations of people who are in diaconal work. So some of my examples come from my own deaconess community, also come from other places in the world. And what I'm doing this week is taking some traditional roles that deacons and deaconesses had in the early church as a way to talk about the Christian service that all people get. And I'm using, I hope that they will be images that you can play with in your mind a little bit, and we'll talk about them more a little bit in the literal sense, but just to kind of let your imagination go and to see how this relates to your own ministry as a Christian. And I'm sorry for the repeat for the two of you who were here last night, but I put some words on the board that I will use. The first one, diakonia, is the Greek word that is translated service or ministry in the New Testament. Diaconal, or some people say diaconal, it's an adjective that means servant-oriented. The diaconate refers to that group of people who are set apart for public ministry, the public diaconal or diaconal ministry of the church, usually deacons or deaconesses. In some denominations, some church bodies, they're called diaconal ministers. So that's just the little word study. The image that we're working with this morning is waiting tables. How many of you have been table waiters?
Never got paid. Is that
you don't have to be paid.
Really, at church.
Yeah, at church.
Yeah, well, I was thinking home.
How many have you? Were you a waiter and paid for it?
I did everything else in a restaurant besides wait tables.
Okay. All right, so food service in general. Well, this Greek word diakonia, that's, as I said, translated service or ministry in the New Testament, is the word that was most often used in Greek to mean waiting tables. And so it's an image that is very closely related to Christian service, Christian ministry. Well, when you think about waiting tables, what are some attitudes or attributes that a good table server needs?
Cheerful.
What?
Cheerful.
Cheerful, okay. But not too much cheerful.
That's too heavy.
Patient.
Okay.
Attentive.
Okay, attentive.
Good memory.
Ah. Talking about table waiting, waiting on table, and what are some of the attitudes and attributes that a good table server needs to have?
Clean hands.
Clean hands, okay. I've never seen that one on the list before, but that's a good one. I think it's getting too late in the season. I'm going to pull them into the... Anything else?
Neat in appearance.
Okay, neat.
Good hygiene.
Okay, that goes with the clean hands. How do you spell G-I-E-N-E? Garrett?
Yeah.
Close enough.
Okay. Well, what, as I was saying before, the word diakonia that's most often translated service or ministry is the word that's used in the waiting at table. And it really is to be attentive to another person's need, patient, often to wait for the sign or signal that service is needed, not doing it on your schedule, but that other person's schedule. It's kind of learning the fine art of being available without interfering, to be helpful but not intrusive. I mean, I've been at restaurants where the waiter or waitress was so chatty that they sort of interfered with our meal, you know, that they were making conversation. Courteous. That, we didn't get that one up here, did we? Cheerful, patient, a good memory, and good hygiene. A table server is also one who responds to a very basic human need. I mean, everybody needs to eat, needs nourishment for life, and it is to offer the food that's needed both by the person served and the server. In the Greek, there were a couple of other additional aspects of table serving or diakonia that I think are kind of helpful to add to the mix. One is that the table server tasted or sampled the food. And it wasn't just to make sure it tasted good, but it was also to make sure it wasn't poison when there wasn't the good hygiene. I mean, the care, the situations, refrigeration and all that we had. So somebody needed to taste the food to make sure that it was safe. And then the other part of diakonia that sort of takes it to another level is that same word is used for the person who catered the feast, the caterer at the wedding banquet. So I think maybe you can begin to see some of the linkages between our own service, our own ministry as Christians, and the table serving. Let's just think a little bit about Jesus. Where do you see some connections between the image that we've been talking about and Jesus' own way of ministering with people?
Well, he was always attentive to people's needs,
okay.
And maybe more attentive than the people wanted him to be.
Okay.
And, you know, patient with them. The wine for the wedding banquet.
Okay.
He had good hygiene. He washed the feet of his disciples.
Okay, he washed the feet of his disciples, and some of us washed feet last night.
He fed the 5,000 a couple times.
Okay, he literally fed people. He also seemed to have a real sense of the importance of people eating together. I mean, the Gospels are filled with stories about table fellowship and eating meals together, so that he was very much tuned into that. I guess it occurred to me also in those other meanings that Jesus really tasted the lot of humanity, that Jesus entered into our life and tasted it. And it occurs to me that my own service with other people is a kind of tasting, that I come to know, I may not consume their whole meal, but I get a sense of learning what their world is like, what their stories are, what their pain is, what their joys are, what kind of bitterness has poisoned them, and sometimes to join in tasting the goodness of God. And in the sense of catering, that I think is a wonderful picture of diakonia, that it's not only tending to an individual need, But it's also to have that more picture of the whole, to be sure that there's enough food to go around and that all the guests have a good time. That's part of the table serving also. In the early church, as the church had their agape meals, it was traditionally the deacons and deaconesses who were involved in gathering the gifts, preparing the table, and serving the food. And in fact, in the book of Acts chapter 6, where there was a conflict in the church at Jerusalem, and it seemed that the widows and orphans who were Greek weren't getting what they needed, that the community set aside six people to serve at table. And it was probably that dynamic of gathering those gifts and giving them out to the people who needed. As early as the second century, we see that deacons and deaconesses were serving at the Eucharistic table, that they often prepared the table and sometimes served, sometimes both the bread and wine and sometimes only the wine. The members of the diaconate, the deacons and deaconesses, carried food and bread and wine to those people who couldn't participate in person at the meal. They were sort of the banquet bearers. They were the welfare workers, those people who were in particular need in the community. And the other thing that the deacons and deaconesses did, and we talked a little bit about this last night too, is that they gathered the needs of those people they served and brought them back as the prayers, into the prayers of the community. It's part of the prayers of the church when the community gathered again for worship. When you think about today, what it is that people in our world are hungering for, what are some of the things that come to your mind?
Spiritually or?
Either. Or what is it? What's the nourishment? I mean, what is it that people, what nourishment are they longing for?
Time to relax.
What?
Time to relax.
Okay.
Sense of safety. So much violence.
Sense of safety.
Some just basics. Food and clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Shelter.
Okay. A lot of people in the world are literally hungry.
Friendships.
Friendships. People care about them. Place to belong.
Work.
Children who want time with their parents. Attention. Children who want time with their parents.
Children who need time with their parents. Okay, it's not hard to begin to think about not only the very literal hunger for food, but also when we think about what it takes to make a whole person, the kind of nourishment that people need for their lives. There's a whole host of ways that people are needing to have table servers, to have people bring that to them. And it seems to me that in responding to those hungers, the people of God not only have opportunity to bring bread, but we also have opportunity to be bread to them, to be the very thing that they need most, that bread of life. Okay, what I'm going to do now is to just tell you about some people that I know who are doing this kind of ministry, and I'd like you to just let your own memories and minds go a little bit as I'm talking about this, to think about how it is that you are a table server, and also how who are some of the table servers that you know? I think of a deaconess in my own town, and not in my congregation, but in a neighboring congregation, who, among other things, oversees a huge food pantry. There really are two food pantries in our county. One of them is at Emmanuel Lutheran Church, and she helps in receiving gifts and offerings from many of the Christian churches in the community. And then make sure that there are volunteers there to do all the sorting and categorizing of the food, and then three afternoons a week when people who need food come. She's not so much, I mean, she's there sometimes doing the hands-on work with people, but she's more the caterer, I guess you would say, that she's more the organizer who oversees all of the work that these other people do. I think of another deaconess who serves in a very wealthy suburban congregation in the Chicago area, who regularly takes the youth group into the city, to Chicago Uptown Ministry, where they prepare and serve a meal to the street people who gather there. They do that, I think, once a month. I think of all the people that I know who are involved in Bread for the World, so that they're really advocating for more food for the people who need it most in the world through efforts at lobbying and letter writing and education. I visited some deaconesses, some Lutheran deaconesses and diaconal workers in Brazil. They have a project. There are many, many people who have no land, and they live in very. Has anybody been to Brazil? They have very makeshift homes.
Are these the people that are trying to get up to the poverty level?
Right, exactly. And they live in these little settlements around the edges of the city, in houses that are made from whatever pieces of wood and cardboard and tin they can scavenge. And it's a whole community of people, usually without any kind of plumbing or sanitation. What this deaconess community has started is what they call gardens for families, where they have found some plots of land that they can make small garden plots for families to grow vegetables for themselves, so that they can at least have some fresh fruit and vegetables. In Indonesia, there are deaconesses who work in the dormitories where the young people, really almost children, 11, 12-year-old young people who are employed in the garment industry, that they go into those dormitories and provide human companionship, some adult role modeling, play games with them, have Bible studies with them, help them with some of those things that they need in order to be more whole people. I think of people I know who regularly volunteer at soup kitchens in the inner cities. Others who offer spiritual guidance, either formally or informally, to people who are searching for some spiritual nourishment. Think of others who are banquet bearers or Eucharistic ministers who extend the Holy Communion to those people who are homebound or isolated in some way. People who deliver meals on wheels, or take a pot of soup or a casserole to a neighbor who has need. So what are some of the things that come to mind for you? Or people that you know who are table servers?
I think of my sister who went, she
She's a Presbyterian pastor. It was a summer for her second time to Costa Rica with their church. Mm-hmm. And she talked about the housing, like you talked about, Brazil, makeshift housing. And the village that they have visited for the two times that she has gone is in a place where it could easily be flooded. It's land that's not safe for people mm-hmm. to build on, but they were able to build a shanty town on there. Mm-hmm. And they're working to build a church, and they take things to play with the children, and they take clothing and things mm-hmm. ready in their time. Mm-hmm.
And she goes with a group from her church?
From her church. Mm-hmm. They take the group down.
We boxed up some Christmas ornaments and sent them along with some other things to the people who were flooded out. And what's that big flood? It was
North Dakota.
Yeah, North Dakota. Yeah, I mean, everything was wiped out, you know. And so we, everybody from the church brought in some Christmas ornaments. We boxed them up and sent them to them, so at least they'd have something to hang on the wall. You know. And also, we once a month go down and Church of Seattle called Emmanuel Lutheran Church down there, and we provide a meal for. They have a homeless center for street men, I guess we'd say, mm-hmm. who are trying to change their life around. Mm-hmm. And one thing that was kind of interesting about that was when they first started it, it was like anybody on the street who wants to come in can come in. They would have 75 or 80 people for the evening meal, and you know, good people to serve that, and that was fine. And then they kind of started to think about it, so they decided that, you know, if you really want to come and partake of the meal and really change your life, you should join, you know, a program to help you get out of the rut that you're in. The attendance dropped off rapidly, because there are some people out there who don't want to change.
Mm-hmm. Just want food.
Just want food. Yep. Want they want the grace, but not the gospel. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That amazed me.
It's fairly common in most soup kitchens.
I would think so, yeah.
That you start talking with them, and most people are the ones that just get in, they get food, they get out.
Our Luther League went down to Compass Center, which is in Skid Row, Seattle, as one of our youth projects on Sunday, and we were providing a meal for that. This is quite a few years ago, and I still remember it while we were doing our little readings. It's like, shut up, let's eat! Always stuck in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Our church also housed a small county food service, but in addition, we pull out of there for our local needs too. Mm-hmm. And happened to be working in the church office for half a day, and a lady came in and needed something. Just got started talking to her, and she had been there before and her need was there again, so she came back. And I was talking to her a little bit while another gal was over getting the food, and she said, "Your church is always makes me feel like I'm not at the bottom of the barrel, or, you know, like I'm not a beggar." She's always so friendly and pleasant. And I guess that was sort of gratifying to hear that you can treat these people with some caring.
Yeah, I think two comments. One is the Christmas ornaments that sometimes I think that, you know, we think of just, you know, the basics, and we don't also think of the beauty. I mean, there's a song about bread and roses. I think, give them bread, but give them roses too. And I think this same wealthy congregation where the youth group goes into the city, there are also some of the women from the women's group, and they are gourmet cooks. And they cook the same kind of meal to take to the inner city that they would serve in their own homes. And, you know, do the white tablecloths and the flowers and the whole bit. I mean, really make it something very, very special. And I think that, I mean, when you think about it, that's something that people need for their nourishment too. Mm-hmm. And you might think, well, Christmas ornaments are a little bit frivolous, you know, if their whole lives have been wiped out. And yet people need that beauty and need that kind of valuing hope. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, I think, you know, working with homeless people, street people is very difficult, very complicated. And you know, when you say the attendance dropped off because people don't want to change, there are also a lot of people who've tried to change a lot of times and haven't been successful at it. People who, I mean, a lot of the single street people are mentally ill. They don't have hope, you know. And that a meal is a tremendous gift to them, even when they can't pull themselves up by their own bootstraps, can't make changes in their lives.
Up mentally ill, there's a Trinity Methodist in Seattle, and they have opened the first overnight shelter for the mentally ill in Seattle. And the tents is small because they have a hard time getting out and finding some of these people, and so just don't want to be there with a bunch of other people. But it's actually kind of interesting because the mayor of Arvine City has taken an extreme interest in it because it's the first one in Seattle to actually address the needs of the mentally impaired.
Yeah, it's a very hard thing in cities, I think. And I mean, Seattle has a more temperate climate than, say, Chicago does, you know, and it's dangerous for people if they don't have a place to stay. But it's a very hard group to work with. Other thoughts of people who are table servers or people that you know, or how you do it yourself?
Well, my life has changed a bit in the last year in that my two elderly parents, who are both 88, had a need to move into assisted care, and it's only a mile from our house, so I feel like I'm spending a lot of time there, and tending to the elderly's mm-hmm. needs is mm-hmm. a whole different
elder care.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll all be here someday.
You have to be patient. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just takes them so long, mm-hmm. and you can't rush them. It's just different.
Mm-hmm. And again, when you think about the things that those people need for the most whole life that they can have, that they still need to be able to make some decisions for themselves. They still need people who treat them as real human beings, even mm-hmm. if their bodies and their minds are failing. I mean, they still need food, they still need the physical care. You know, all of that can be, I think, understood in the context of this table serving. I once visited a deaconess who was working in a nursing home on an Alzheimer's unit, a unit where people had dementia, and I was struck by the fact that on every person's door, or beside every person's door, was a picture of them younger in life, so that every person who went in was reminded this is a person who had a life. I mean, you know, who was a regular person like we were. So there were wedding pictures and pictures of people at their jobs, and it was very touching. You shake your head like that.
I've been to an Alzheimer's unit, and they had that too. Uh-huh. And I thought that was neat.
Uh-huh. Quite a different situation.
I have a sister-in-law who takes her two dogs into Alzheimer's units, mm-hmm. and it's amazing how people will remember having a dog like that, mm-hmm. what the name mm-hmm. was, even though they don't remember anything.
Yeah, they may not remember their own daughter, but they remember their dog. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this deaconess that I was visiting did do that too. She had a dog that she took to work with her every day. And the dog was there and people related to it. I've also been in places where they have birds, where they have an aviary. Maybe we were at the same one. Well, I think they learned that these things are very helpful. And again, that people, you know, who could no longer relate to other human beings found something in those animals that gave them peace, gave them something to do.
Like Helen Keller yesterday.
Yeah, the dog.
The dogs could relate to her.
We have a deaconess student who was part of a, what was it called? She was part of a volunteer group that all took their pets to nursing homes. I mean, they would do this on a weekly basis. They'd go to nursing homes and take their dogs and cats and gerbils and whatnot.
Yeah, Tacoma Lutheran Home has got several resident pets. They've got some birds around the place, and then there's dog and at least two cats just kind of roam the place. It's kind of neat.
Other ways that you serve table? We must do that for the youth fit.
Constantly. My life. So one of my kids made me a name tag that said Paul Davis, youth slave. So that's so as you were going through your list of everybody, a different person came to mind than myself many times. So everything that I do.
Our church also support the Friendship Center, which is the place for abused women and their children. And they'll a couple times a year, we pack up bags of things that they need if they're going out to start to live in an apartment or whatever, or for just the residents that live in the Friendship Center for some of the time.
People who leave behind all of their belongings in order to find a place of safety need to have those personal belongings replaced.
Aren't there some people that don't even like to go to those shelters because they don't feel even that they are safe places? Too close together. Somebody right next to you might stab you or steal or whatever.
That's why they're having a hard time finding volunteers at the Trinity Methodist overnight shelter. And I'll be honest, that's one of the reasons why I have not volunteered.
We took our, this summer we took our confirmation class to the Compass Center. Drove up there, gave them a tour of the place. And this is a bunch of 7th and 8th graders. And we took a tour of the facility and learned everything that they do there. And I asked them what kind of service volunteer opportunities they had for groups of these kids to come down and serve. And they said that, well, a lot of times a youth group come and spend the night there, and then in the morning serve a meal. Now, at night they'll walk around Pioneer Square, which is a very dangerous place. But you should walk around in a big group and you're not being stupid, you should be fine. But we were in the dining hall, we'd help them unload their groceries and trouble each other, so we helped them do that. And then when we're in there, the kids sounded excited about coming back and serving in this place. We got outside and I said, "So you guys want me to set up, overnight here?" Just, "No, we want to come down here. It's scary, it's dirty." And we got back and some of the kids had related what they had seen to their parents about how dangerous and how dirty this place was. And it did look a bit dirty. It was cleaning day, so things were kind of messed up and there were things around. And some of the parents came and we said, "Don't take my children there. Don't go down there." And I was taking some of my children to Skid Row in Portland the next week. I didn't tell them. They knew where we were going, but I didn't tell them that where we were going was worse than the Compass Center until we got back. And now they get a better picture of what it was. And so now they say, "Okay, now we can go to Compass Center." And now some of the parents that said, "Well, don't take my kids there," want to go.
Our youth have gone to the Compass Center too, and they've done the walk, and they were really mm-hmm. excited when one of the guys they have seen every year when they've gone on their walk sort of thing was on the front cover of the Lutheran.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So the guy that was looking up from his sleeping bag?
Mm-hmm.
I thought I knew him. Don, what are you doing now?
Well, what do you think about that, putting yourself in danger? I think if you're the table server who has to taste the food, I mean, that's kind of a dangerous
job. Just out of curiosity, point of interest, how many people were poisoned in the old days? I mean, was that a common way of offing people?
No, it wasn't. So it wasn't because people were intentionally poisoned, but it was just the...
Going on that hike up to Heart Lake and eating the red berries?
Yeah.
Oh.
Or food not because there was no refrigeration, spoilage, and you know all of that sort of thing. So
but it was a common way to get rid of the king.
Well, it was, yes.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. We got tofu tonight for dinner.
You think that's the closest thing to?
I don't know. Before I've made it myself, it's kind of tasteless without anything to it. So
yeah, actually, last night for dinner as well, you weren't paying attention. The white stuff in the vegetables.
Oh, is that what that was?
It's what my wife told me. I don't know.
Oh. I had thirds on it, so I guess I'll survive.
I think when it comes to safety, when you're in those sorts of situations, that you just have to trust that God will be there to protect you. And if, because if that's where you're supposed to be, I'll look out.
Oh, God. What? Thanks. The mission trip that we took, in the book Devotions that we shared on a trip in Luke chapter 9, Jesus calls us to be homeless.
Mm-hmm.
He says, sell all your possessions.
Mm-hmm.
Take nothing with you on your journey but a tunic. Don't take any extra purse. Don't take money.
Mm-hmm.
Go be homeless
mm-hmm.
and serve those who are out there.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus was homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Son of Man has no place to lay his head. And so if we think about it in those terms, we are all called to be servants and called to give up and to go. And we do that, yeah, we'll go out, we'll be persecuted and we will be scorned and we will be ridiculed.
And there is a certain amount of vulnerability
mm-hmm.
in being this kind of servant, wasn't there?
Even waitresses take a lot of flack.
Yeah, you betcha. Yeah.
They take a lot of abuse.
I think of the scripture too, though, whether we live or whether we die, we are the Lord's.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm from Oregon, so of course the Springfield shooting was very close to all of us. And I think if we know the Lord and something violent happens to us, it's bad, but it's not so bad because the end is still going to live with Christ through eternity.
Mm-hmm.
I think we think of things from an earthy human standpoint, any one of us could walk out the door and drive our car and be killed or whatever. You know, that's no more violent that probably than walking into a school cafeteria and being gunned down. I mean, it seems different, but so I think, like you say, having faith in the Lord that, you know, whatever happens to us, He's watching over us.
Yeah, I guess that there is a sense of the table server is handing over what is not theirs to start with. You know, that you're giving people what's been given to you. And that there is a certain, detachment from possessing those things, and even to the point of possessing maybe our own lives, that there is a being willing to be in that kind of risky situation. I mean, not going around looking for trouble, but as you say, if you are called into those kind of dangerous, risky situations, I served as a deaconess in an inner city parish in Kansas City, Missouri, for a while. And we had a food pantry and did emergency assistance for people. And very often I was in the church alone. And we had a locked door so that people did have to ring a bell to come in and you could decide whether or not to open the door. But one day a couple of women came in and needed some groceries. And I gave them what were pretty generous bags of groceries. And after they had left, I realized that my wallet had been removed from my purse. So I followed them out the door and into their car and said, I also gave them a check to pay their utilities. So I had given them probably $400, not I, but the congregation had given them $400 in groceries and utility payments, and then they had taken my wallet, which had only about $3 in it. I mean, there wasn't much money there, but I was so irate, and I followed them out there, and I, you know, gave them the little lecture, got my wallet back, and afterwards I thought, you know, that really was a stupid thing for me to do. I mean, it was really stupid because I could have been done in right then. But I often thought about how this kind of service does put one in a position of being taken advantage of. And how do you weigh that? You know? And a lot of social service agencies and food pantries and all of that will set up screening systems, you know, that are supposed to prevent the kind of taken advantage of. And I think there's, you know, that there is some value in that. But I also think that there is a sense in which to do this kind of ministry means that we do put ourselves into situations that we will be taken advantage of if we are going to be generous with people.
I'm looking into foster care, and in some ways there's a fear there of, you know, if I end up with a teenage kid or something.
Uh-huh.
But I'm like, no, there's a lot of good that can come with this, and that is just a certain handful of kids. And they will help me deal with that should that situation arise.
Are you a foster parent?
I'm going to become one.
Well, that's a real table service, isn't it?
Another group that I have no experience with at all that comes to mind is prison ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Are there some diaconate programs that do that?
Mm-hmm. We do. We have a deaconess who's a prison chaplain. And is there is Pendleton the place where there's?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where she is.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just going to be moving to a new site. Was there a new prison built someplace in Oregon recently?
Well, they opened Damish as a prison, didn't they?
Maybe it's not a new one, but maybe it's a new place where they're going to have a chaplaincy. But that is a very, very hard place to work. It would be for me. I mean, she loves it. She does very well. But I think they're also, I know of a group in St. Louis that well, they do things like they will take children to visit their parents in prison, and they regularly take a busload of children to visit their mothers and fathers who are in prison. And they also have programs. They have transitional housing for people when they are let out of prison. And they have they set up support groups in congregations for people who, as they come out of prison, so that that it reduces their return rate, because their resources for survival on the outside are so slim that they they have trouble getting jobs, they have trouble finding places to live, they have trouble finding just people to connect with.
Their profession is being a criminal.
Well, for some people, but even for people who aren't, for whom that's not the case, they become so cut off from what could be their support system that they cannot survive. I mean, that the only people who will have anything to do with them are people that they've met in prison, you know, or people who are on their way to prison. And so in these congregations, what they will do is set up a support group for someone coming out of prison so that they help them get a job and stay in it, that they will help people find housing, help people with, they have potlucks at their church, and so that there's interaction with other people. And again, this is table serving. This is providing people those things that they need in order to survive and to be whole people. I mean, there are some people whose profession, sadly, is crime, but there are others for whom that's not the case and don't want it to be the case, but circumstances just keep plowing them back in the vases. Would you mind saying a little bit about how you've gotten into foster care or what?
Well, actually a friend who is doing it had given my name to the lady who oversees it. Uh-huh. So just really started exploring it and doing the forms and getting the house approved for safety and everything. And then we go through like 27 hours of classes on how to deal with the kids and the interaction with their parents. Covers a wide variety of stuff. Discipline, which is the thing I'm most scared of. Because when I've taught Sunday school, I can't even keep the kids disciplined. Be quiet! But to me, kids who are out there who aren't loved, it's just a pretty important need I see. Since I'm single, I just send me one.
Will you ever have more than one at a time?
I can't right now. My house is too small.
Are you going to work and do this at the same time?
No. I can't have preschoolers because there's no one to stay home. But school-aged children.
Mm. What is your work?
I'm in human resources. People all day long.
Yeah, that's really commendable, I think.
I'm excited. I'm really excited about it. And I'm hoping eventually it'll lead to adoption. I feel better about this change in my life.
Yeah.
I've been single for too long.
So do you know how soon you'll be?
It takes 4 months to go through the whole process and the licensing. Mm-hmm. And then as kids become available.
Mm-hmm. And it might happen for shorter or long periods of time.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll do, I haven't decided yet, emergency thing where it could call you in the middle of the night, or a long-term situation. Depends on the kids are out there.
One of our deaconesses has been sort of a professional foster caregiver. Mm-hmm. She and her husband, that they've had several dozen children over a period of time, several of whom they have adopted. They have about 5 biological children, and I think they've adopted about 5 or 6 more over the years. And oftentimes the ones who they adopt are children with special needs, mm-hmm. that really are not going to be adopted by anyone else. And she really understands that to be her service, her ministry. I mean, she and her husband and her other children, right. Most of whom are adults now, really understand that's really what they're about. And I think they're licensed to take up to about 4 or 5 at a time, so they can take whole families, mm-hmm. and there are not very many places, mm-hmm. where children can often be kept together with their siblings. Mm-hmm. Well, I think just to kind of close, to think about table serving again, and to realize that we have been invited to a feast that God has given us, and that Christ himself has served us at the banquet, and that it is the nourishment that we receive from that that again and again empowers us to be attentive and courteous and patient and helpful and responsive to those other people in our world who are waiting for us to serve them, waiting for us to wait on table for them. So we just close with a prayer of thanks, and if I'll start the prayer, and if any of you would like to add something, I'll leave some space in between, and then we'll close. We thank you, O God, that you have invited us to the banquet, that you have again and again fed us with bread to nourish our bodies, with the bread of life to nourish our spirits, with bread in the form of other people and community to provide for other needs that we have. We give you thanks for what you have given us, and for those people that we have thought of today who are table servers in your name to all those hungry, thirsty people in our world.
I'd like to give thanks for Holden Village here, for the bread and the wine, for the peace that it gives to the mind, that we may learn how to actually live a little more simply.
Lord Jesus, I thank you for coming to us and modeling for us what you mean by being a servant, showing us exactly how and what to do so that we may go out and be servants to others.
Thank you for all the table servers who have gone before us and shown us the way.
Give us opportunities when we go back to our communities to be table servers or continuous where we need to continue in those opportunities. But also, Lord, open our hearts, and as you show those opportunities, may we all be willing to say, "Here am I, send me." All of our prayers, spoken and silent, we offer to you, trusting your great love for us, for the sake of Jesus Christ, our Savior. Amen.
Amen.
Well, thank you very much for coming. There are still three more in this series. Tomorrow is storytelling as service.
What time is that?
I think it's 3:45 tomorrow afternoon. I think I'm on the afternoon the rest of the week. Thursday is keeping the door. It's about being on the boundaries and welcoming and hospitality and things like that. And the final one is on keeping the light. So, thank you very much. This was
Thanks.
A wonderful discussion, and I appreciate it very much. Thanks. Thank you. I didn't get your name.
My name's Dale.
Dale. And you're from Seattle area, I take it.
Joshua Redutsch from
Dallas. And you're Swedish, is this right?
Yeah, that's correct. we open our hearts and minds and souls to all Swedish.
Oh, I think the tape is over. I hope you didn't get that.
Oh!
Well, thanks so much.
Thank you.
How long have you been involved in the ACMO?
Well, I've been in this now for 30 years.
I say,
you answered the
question. Good
service. It is. Yes.
Good service. Well, we need to turn the tape off?
No, they do that often. Some of them are.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. Right. So, very good.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming. Appreciate it.